and it popped out. She's stuck on 29, and it's ripped down by Parks. 4-point Wisconsin lead. MSU ball, 3:22 to go in overtime. Driving left baseline, Act little runner off the window, good. Quick two for MSU, 2-point Wisconsin lead. Backcourt LaBarbera. Spins away with the dribble, double team, bounces to post Pishalova. Pass up the right sideline to Schrammick, and here comes Wisconsin with 3 minutes to play in overtime. LaBarbera dribbling with the right hand, touches her chin with the left, bounces high post, caught by Schrammick at the right elbow. Schrammick back out right side, it's LaBarbera. One dribble, bounces for post Pishalova. Five on the shot clock to Williams at the free throw line, back out LaBarbera with two. Baseline jumpers up, it's no good, and she's fouled with 1.2 on the shot clock. And Avery LaBarbera will go to the free throw line to shoot a pair. Fouled on that jumper, which was no good. So LaBarbera now steps to the free throw line in overtime for Wisconsin, where she will have a pair. 78% free throw shooter this season. LaBarbera drills the first. She's got just 6 points tonight, and that's her first free throw of the game. First trip to the free throw line. This to bring it back out to four. Got it. Got them both. 78-74 Wisconsin. 2:45 to go in overtime. Michigan State handling the basketball into the front court. Wisconsin hasn't won in East Lansing in almost 13 years. Eck, three left side. Missed it. Tipped into the air. Grabbed down low by Parks. Kicks it back out. McDaniel, right side three. That one's no good. Off the hands of LaBarbera and out of bounds on the baseline. It'll stay with Michigan State. MSU 8 for 25, shooting the three-point shot tonight. Inbounds Joyner. Joyner curling on a drive in the lane. Has it down low on the right. Kicks out to the left side. Eka three. That one's short. Who has it? Chased down by Post Pishalova in the corner. Now the double team comes at her. Bounces to LaBarbera. Cross court pass to the middle of the backcourt. And it's Wilkie crossing the timeline. 2:10 to go in overtime. Wisconsin 78, MSU 74. 2:06 to go. LaBarbera out on top. Screen set by Williams. Now she has it lane line left. Drives and kicks out. Back out on top. Schrammick steers it to the right. Post Pishalova. Seven on the shot clock. Has it right wing. Tries an entry bounce. It's stolen. It's loose on the floor. Who has it? New fresh shot clock for the Badgers. Now they throw it away. Stolen. McDaniel the other side. Bangs into Wilkie. Missed the shot, but a foul. Just found Wilkie and sought that contact on her drive to the basket. And that is the fourth for Wilkie. So here's something to keep in mind, too. That's the third Wisconsin Badger with four fouls. Wilkie, Schrammick, and Williams, all key contributors, all players with 10 or more points tonight for the Badgers, all have four fouls. McDaniel then misses the free throw. 77% free throw shooter is no good in a four-point game. The next one is good. It's a three-point Wisconsin lead. 1:44 to play. Overtime here at the Breslin Center. Wilkie dribbles across the timeline and hands off to LaBarbera as Wisconsin will set up its offense. 1:34 to play, 20 on the shot clock. Avery LaBarbera, right-handed dribble out on top for the Badgers. Still has it out on top. Joiner defense. Screen set by Williams. Now the handoff to Post Pishalova on the right wing. Shot clock at seven to Sarah Williams at the free throw line. Spinning in the paint. Fade away. Tough shot. Missed it. Rebounded down low by Parks as she clears. 3-point lead for Wisconsin. MSU ball. 1:12 to play. McDaniel has it. Out just right of center. Has it on the wing now. Defended by LaBarbera. Parks trying to set a screen. Instead, McDaniel drives strong to the cup. Check it. That's Hageman who scores and flexes right in the face of LaBarbera. That was Hageman with the layup. 55 seconds, 78-77. Wisconsin by 1 point. 50 seconds to play, 25 on the shot clock. It's the Badgers cross the timeline with Avery LaBarbera handling the basketball for the UW. Drives hard to her right near side, and there's a timeout called by Wisconsin. As Coach Marissa Mosley and the Badgers take a timeout up by one. With the ball, with 40.1 seconds to play, and we'll keep it right here. 40 seconds to go, Wisconsin by one. Michigan State in this quarter, 3 of 7. Wisconsin, 2 of 3. But the Badgers have made 4 of 5 from the free throw line. 8 points in overtime for the Badgers, 7 so far for MSU. Spartans have 5 players in double figures, scoring led by Joyner's career high tying 20. The Badgers have 3, led by Sarah Williams, career high 29 points, 12 of 15 shooting. But the Badgers are trying for back-to-back Big Ten wins. Trying for their second straight after beating Minnesota at the Kohl Center on Sunday. .1 seconds to go. Two teams still huddled up right now. 1 point Wisconsin lead. It'll be Badgers basketball here in overtime. Tied at 70 to head to the OT. Wisconsin led the whole way until a layup down low by Parks gave Michigan State its first lead of the game with 23 seconds to play. Wisconsin out of timeouts, went down to Sarah Williams, tie the game. Now we're in OT. 1 point Badgers lead with the ball. Caught by Wilkie in the corner. 12 on the shot clock. Wilkie dribbling out near midcourt. Dribbling off to the left. Bounces left elbow. Post Pichalova, 5 on the shot clock. 1 dribble. Step back. Long 2. No. Williams offensive rebound. A dribble. She goes up for it. And it rolls in with 22 and a half seconds to go. 31 points for Williams tonight. 80 to 77. A 3-point Badgers lead. And MSU takes its final timeout now. 22.5. The Spartans trail by 3. And what can you say about Sarah Williams? She has been amazing tonight. 31 points, 13 of 16 from the floor, 13 rebounds. That's her second double-double of her career. And this is a career-high scoring game for her. With the 31 points. She also has a steal and 3 blocks, and those 3 blocks all came in the first. Unbelievable effort from Williams tonight. But it's not over. 22.5 seconds to play. 80 to 77. It'll be Michigan State ball, and they can move it into the front court. So if you're thinking about a 3, they haven't hit a 3 in overtime. They've made 8 in the game. They're 31%, 8 for 26. But they do have some 3-point shooters on this team. They're 3rd in the Big Ten in 3-point shooting percentage. So here we go. Michigan State to inbound. Caught by Joyner. Joyner, top of the key, Williams on her. Joyner now attacks the rim. Missed the layup. It's picked up by Wilkie with 15, and she's fouled. Joyner missed the layup. Williams would not give her a shot at the top of the arc, so Joyner said, okay, I'll go take the 2, we'll play the foul game, but she missed the driving layup. And now Maddie Wilkie will step to the free throw line for the Badgers as some fans here at the Breslin Center start to exit. Free throw up and in by Wilkie, and now more fans are starting to stand. Grab their coats. Beat the traffic. Still not done, though. Second one's in, 82-77. 5-point game. It's going to take a miracle, though. 14.7. Hageman, front court for MSU. Lost the ball. Got it back. Spinning. Left side 3. She's fouled. She misses the 3, but she'll have 3 free throws coming up. 8 seconds to play, so 3 free throws here can cut it to 2. So for Williams, now her day is done. Williams fouls out of the game. That was her 5th foul. It's going to put Hageman at the free throw line to shoot 3. 57% free throw shooters, Hageman. But Williams ends the game 31-13. 82-77 Wisconsin with 8 seconds to play in overtime. Here's the first free throw. It's good. So basically, for MSU, if you get these three, it's a two-point game. You try to steal or foul right away and see what happens after that. But you got to make your free throw. Second one's good. It's doable, but definitely the odds are on the side of Wisconsin currently. 82-79. This to make it a two-point game with the free throw. It's good. All right, 8 seconds to play, two-point lead. Now Wisconsin will have to inbound. And Michigan State throws this full-court press at you. They have the entire game. And Wisconsin's going to have to make a play. Gets it into LaBarbara, quickly fouled with 7.3. Okay. So Avery LaBarbara needs to make two free throws to make it a two-possession game. 7.3 seconds to play. 78% the free throw shooting percentage for LaBarbara this season. First one, it's good. It's the front rim, back rim, and it falls. 83-80. This to make it two possessions with 7.3 seconds to go in overtime. LaBarbara, it's up. It's no good. It's knocked out of bounds. Last touch, Michigan State. 5.4. Spartans lose it out of bounds. Wisconsin catches a break. And they're going to take a look at it first. But I'm pretty sure, even from my vantage point up here at the Breslin Center, it did look like there were two Spartans fighting for that ball. But you never know. They're going to take a look at the monitor to see if it truly was off of Michigan State. And if it is, Wisconsin will have the ball up three with 5.4 seconds to play. See if we get a replay. We will see a replay. Was close. I think it's off MSU. I have to see another replay, but it almost looked like they called it out of bounds as one of the state players was saving it. And she looked to be in bounds when she saved it, but I've only seen one replay here at the Breslin Center. 83-80. Still courtside looking at that. Wisconsin 5-11 this season, 1-4 in the Big Ten. Trying to pick up win number 6 and Big Ten win number 2. Their first road conference win of the season. They're able to get this one here tonight as well. 5.4 seconds. A big call, obviously. And it looked to be in the, once again, only one replay they've shown. And they're done taking a look at the monitor. It looked to be off MSU. But now, they're still taking a look at it, I guess. Well, the longer this goes, the more uneasy it makes you feel as a Badger fan. Because if it was clear and obvious, then they should be done. But remember, Michigan State doesn't have any timeouts either, so for some reason, I don't think it was off Schrammick, but if they happen to say it was off Schrammick, who was the only Badger down there, Michigan State would have to go the length of the floor for three. Now, they did go the length of the floor with 4.5 seconds earlier in the game at the end of the quarter and scored a layup. But they're still courtside looking at that last ball that got knocked out of bounds. It was called off of Michigan State. And now the three officials are done looking at the monitor. And they will gather together to talk about this one. What's the conversation here? Once again, I have been privy to just one replay. And they blow the whistle, I think, it'll be Wisconsin ball. Hold on. Yeah, it'll be Badgers ball. So after all that, it will stay with Wisconsin. 83-80. 3-point lead for the Badgers. Now they need to get this in. They just got called for a 5-second call at the end of the fourth quarter, or toward the ending portions of the fourth. 5.8 seconds to play. Quick whistle and a foul before any inbounds pass. McDaniel fouls Leitzinger. Leitzinger, 6 of 8 from the free throw line this season. Needs one free throw to make it a 2-possession game. And she makes it. 84-80 Wisconsin. And now the fans, once again, the ones who stayed before that first wave left, getting up. Second one, no good. Into the hands of MSU. 3 seconds. It's a 4-point Wisconsin lead. Here's a three at the buzzer. Fouled. The shot's no good. And Michigan State will go to the line for three. Wilkie will be called for her fifth, and I don't know why she was even attempting to block a shot, quite frankly. It's a 4-point game. Wisconsin could have ran back to their bench and just let Michigan State do whatever happened. Zero is on the clock, and now they're going to have to go take a look at this and figure out how much time's left, and Michigan State will be shooting three, but what it does is it also gives the Spartans an opportunity to tie the game. I don't know why everyone's leaving. It's a 4-point game. You're going to have three free throws. You make two, you miss the second, you put it back up and in, and we're tied. The entire crowd is leaving. I mean, 84-80, I get it. 0.9 seconds remain. Listen, some crazier stuff has happened in the game of basketball before. I'm not saying it's likely to get two free throws, a miss, a putback, and a tie. It's very unlikely. But there's still a chance. McDaniel will shoot 77%. She'll have three free throws. My guess is, well, it's going to be very important to make the first two, and she misses it. Oh, no. Now what you got to do is make it. You got to make this one. The second one is up, and that one popped out. Well, now it's over. Okay, everybody, you're right. You can leave. 0.9 seconds to play. Here's the third free throw. It's missed. It's grabbed by Schrammick. There's the buzzer, and the Wisconsin Badgers have won back-to-back Big Ten games. Final score from East Lansing, Wisconsin 84, Michigan State 80 in overtime, and it's the first win in East Lansing in almost 13 years. 84-80. Wisconsin wins it in overtime. That is back-to-back victories in the Big Ten for the UW. Wisconsin now 6-11 and 2-4 in the Big Ten. MSU falls to 10-7 and 2-4 in the conference. And the Badgers earn a road victory tonight. Well, coming up on the post-game show, we'll run through the final team and individual numbers for you. And in a couple of minutes, we'll hear from Wisconsin head coach Marissa Mosley. That's next. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
At Cenex, we're locally owned and operated, so your community is our community. That's why your Cenex goes far beyond the store. We fuel community connections by supporting local festivals, restoring town monuments, and renovating baseball fields. Now in its fourth year, we'll have contributed more than $400,000 to Cenex communities through our Hometown Pride initiative, because community connections make the places we live so special. Cenex, powered locally.
When you set up a savings goal with U.S. Bank, it grows with you. There's no limit to what you can crochet. I mean, can do. Doesn't have to be crocheting, but it totally could be. Like the headphones you're listening to this ad with, you could totally crochet those. There's no telling where your savings goal will take you. Maybe you'll save enough for yarn to crochet your house or the whole town. Oh, right. Doesn't have to be crochet related.
Set up savings goals on the U.S. Bank mobile app, even for the wildest of dreams. U.S. Bank. We'll get there together. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Pride.
Left corner, three on the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
Force, and I've deployed three times. Being a veteran, it's interwoven into your DNA. It is really the absence of the connection and the purpose that can really drive a lot of veterans to some negative thoughts. For those who are in a suicidal crisis, the window of time to save somebody's life is very short. Our duty is to protect ourselves and protect our families. And one way you can do that is store your weapons safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Postgame show is underway from the Breslin Center. Wisconsin a winner tonight by a final score of 84-80. It took overtime, but the Badgers pull it off. Back-to-back Big Ten wins now for Marissa Mosley's team, and the head coach joins me now postgame. Coach, congratulations on this one.
I don't know that we had many of these calls last year, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, 84-80 in overtime. What was the key? Well, I can tell you who the key was, Sarah Williams. Why don't we start with
incredible.
Her? 31 points, career high, 13 rebounds as well.
You know, it's so funny. When we saw Sarah, on film, I said to my staff, man, this kid is so good. And then when we watched her live, I was like, I don't know, but she is every bit what I thought she was and more. She is the heart of the Lion tonight, and I think this was a great coming out party for her. You know, she's had a great season already, but as a freshman in the Big Ten, to do what she did tonight on the road, couldn't be more proud.
Yeah, your team led basically the entire way until late in the game when Michigan State took its first lead of the contest. But once again, without any timeouts, can you kind of talk about the play that set up Sarah Williams to get two more to tie it?
We were looking for a high ball screen. My mind's a little bit mushed right now, but she went and got an offensive rebound and put it back. And, you know, we talked to our big guys constantly about having a crash and, make winning plays, and it just couldn't be more proud of her and the rest of the team. You know, this was a full team effort. They believed from the beginning, and we talk about, we got to play with a little chip on our shoulder, and I think they absolutely did that tonight.
Yeah, you talked about the rebounding. Michigan State was third in the conference coming into tonight in rebounds per game. You out-rebounded them. Your team did tonight 40-33. How important was that rebounding for your club?
Oh, it's huge. Especially in big moments. And, offensive rebounds is something that we haven't done a great job of this season, but crashing and getting extra possessions for us and then obviously being able to get to the free throw line. But for us to out-rebound, Michigan State, we knew that was going to be a huge key to the game. And we really bought into what it is that we were trying to accomplish. And again, like I said, I couldn't be more proud of the effort. You can hear her. She just came into the locker room, so teammates are so excited for her.
Yeah, 31 for her. A final question before I let you go celebrate with your team. Before the game, I talked about in the last win against Minnesota, kind of the unsung heroes in Ronnie Porter and Natalie Leitzinger. Could you give that award maybe tonight to Christina Ellu? 9 points off the bench. She goes 3 of 4.
Absolutely. Chris was huge coming in. She stayed the course. She continued to work hard every day at practice, and for her to come in, she made some huge buckets, some huge drives to the basket, and definitely unsung hero.
Well, we could hear the team cheering for Sarah when she came back after that interview with TV. I'll let you go. Celebrate with your team. Congratulations on the overtime win tonight.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, that's head coach Marissa Mosley. The Badgers win it in OT over Michigan State, 84-80. We'll take a break and come back, take a look at the final numbers in this one after this. You're listening to Badger Basketball from Learfield.
Time to redo this basement?
Yeah, a home gym, movie theater, model train utopia.
Or yoga studio?
I'm flexible-ish.
Great. I'll just use the U.S. Bank mobile app so we can plan it out.
Which way are you leaning? Setting a savings goal or applying for a home improvement loan?
I say we look at both options, right here in the app.
Budget for a really good home gym. We deserve it.
Noted.
Help for today, planning for tomorrow. That's what U.S. Bank is for. U.S. Bank. We'll get there together. Equal housing lender member FDIC.
Another season of women's and men's college sports is underway. Follow your alma mater or favorite team in their pursuit of the prestigious Learfield Directors Cup at LDirectorsCup on Twitter and online at TheDirectorsCup.com. Trophies will be awarded in June 2023 to the winning institutions in all competitive divisions. Learfield Directors Cup, the crowning achievement in college athletics.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life, but for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
What is dedication?
My biggest fear in the middle of my addiction was that my kids wouldn't have a father. I overdosed on heroin, and I lived. And I started thinking, you know what? This isn't my story. My desire to change had finally outweighed my desire to stay the same. I felt powerless for so much of my life. It's important to me that my kids are empowered and truly believe that if they can think it, they can do it. I definitely had to become a better man to be a better father. For the first time, I finally feel like I'm exactly where I should be, where I want to be.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages,
start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're serious comedy to start your day.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Cloudy skies tonight with lows around 28. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. A few flurries possible at times. Highs level off around 32. A few flurries possible at times again. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 20. Overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
It would not back down. They go on an 8-0 run after they chip away to tie it at 66. Then they get their first lead 70-68 thanks to Tyer Park scoring down low. Wisconsin goes back, post Pishalova to Williams, ties it at 70. We go to overtime where actually Wisconsin at the end of regulation, Michigan State called a timeout, turned it over. The Badgers got it back, a call for a double dribble. And Michigan State had one last three-point heave in the front court to win the game. They didn't get it. Overtime comes, and Wisconsin is able to take it out to an 84-80 final score to win their second Big Ten game of the season. 2-4 in conference play this season for the Badgers. All right, we'll take another break, come back, and take a look at the individual stats. And it was a career night for Wisconsin freshman Sarah Williams. I've got the numbers next. Plus, we'll listen to some of the highlights from this game, so don't go anywhere. That's next. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy skies tonight with lows around 28. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. A few flurries possible at times. Highs level off around 32. A few flurries possible at times again. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 20. Overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes and even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy skies tonight with lows around 28. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. A few flurries possible at times. Highs level off around 32. A few flurries possible at times again. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 20. Overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
That's WeSaySaveIt.org, a message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
to fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So day 165 in the Ingredion strike. Workers there in Cedar Rapids, Iowa have been on strike 165 days. We were there, if you remember back during the Working Class Heroes Tour, we visited their picket line and spent a day talking with them about, you know, this wildly profitable multinational corporation who, honestly, making big money, basically stealing wages from them. And what we were talking about before, the idea of companies continually suppressing wages, taking benefits away, making what was once a prosperous working class job, basically a poverty wage job that you barely get by on. Well, these workers are brave enough to stand up and say, you know what? No, we're not doing it, not just for ourselves, but for future generations. This cannot be stopped. And here to share some thoughts on where we are in day 165, I've asked Jason Davis to come talk with us. Jason is an international representative with the BCTGM International Union. Their website, bctgm.org. Jason, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick, for having us.
So it's day 165, and look, nobody wants a strike to go on this long. Where are we? What's going on?
Absolutely not. You know, strike goes on this, you know, that's always the last course of action to take when you're getting to trying to protect your contract and what you've had. You know, this strike has been more about keeping what we have as opposed to advancing in this contract, which has been a rather frustrating part. But, yeah, we're day 165 into this strike. The members' resolve on the line remains steady. I'm so proud of this group, Local 100G here in Cedar Rapids. We have had 165 days into this strike. We still have nobody that has crossed our picket line. So they have stayed out 100% through this whole piece. It's been hard on the families and hard on the members out here on the line. We went through the holidays, went through the new year on strike. But the community support still is very strong here in Cedar Rapids. And then the labor support here in Cedar Rapids is just phenomenal. The Hawkeye Labor Council here, its executive director, Rick Boyle, has been huge helps for us out on the line, putting together toy drives, putting together food drives, things of that nature. Donations continue to come in, which helps supplement the small amount of strike pay that our folks are getting. But it's enough to put a little bit of food on the table and try to get through with the duties that they're going through on the strike.
Now, the frustrating part of this, Jason, is, you know, when we were talking to the people on the picket line, it's just what you said. These are folks who are not looking to make a killing. They're just looking to make a living. They're looking to hold on to the standard of living that they've had for years now. They don't want to lose even more. And as I understand, there have been concessionary contracts in the past. This was kind of the end of the road of them saying, no more. We're drawing the line here. And yet this is a wildly profitable company with a CEO who in 2021 pocketed, according to the AFL-CIO, over $10 million or 449 times what those guys on the picket line are making. So it's not like they don't have the money. It's that they don't want to share it with the workers.
That's exactly it, Rick. And it's very disgusting when you think of it that way. You know, this company being wildly profitable the way it is, it's profitable with the work rules that are in place in that contract today. And to come in and try to gut those work rules, to cut some of our overtime scheduling, and even more so to cut our vacation time, cut into actual days away from work, while they're turning such a profit, it's disgusting. It should be criminal, but it's absolutely disgusting.
Now, when we were there, and correct me if I'm wrong, help me to remember this, because I was literally shocked when the gentleman explained it to me. He said, "Well, the language that they want to add into your contract is to force these guys and gals to work 14 straight days, 12 hours a day without a day off." Is that accurate?
It's feasible that could happen, and that's absolutely a possibility that could come into it with some of the scheduling pieces that the company's pushed forward. You know, that's kind of a maximum. You know, if they choose to go to a 12-hour type of shift, you know, don't worry, you're not going to work more than 14, 12-hour days in a row. One of the things they benefit from, our members benefit from, and the schedules that they're on now, it's a 8-hour type of schedule, is when they have off days, their days are off. They aren't called back into work. These aren't on-call employees. They get their hours. They work 7 straight days before they get a day off. They get that day off. They know they're going to have that day off. Under the company's proposal on these 12-hour shifts, these folks could be called into work. It turns them into somewhat of a call-in employee. And the only reassurance they did give us is, don't worry, you won't work more than 14 straight days.
Jeez. You know, Jason, you know, my mind, I'm now spinning back to the 1800s, you know, when we had a 6-day work week from sunup to sundown, and you were basically just tools that were discarded, where you actually got up, you lived to work. And we fought, people fought, bled, and died for the 8-hour day, for 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what we will. And I hear this and I'm going, have we literally gone back 100 years? have we really reverted that far back?
You know, that's the sad part to some of that greed. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in some cases, what really shocks me, you know, and one of our continuing sticking points currently is this vacation. In today's economy, and trying to get workers into a factory, who cuts vacation? What employer shortens the amount of time that people get to have time off? Today's workers are interested in having time off to be with their families, time off to spend, you know, doing the things that they need to do with their families.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, like you said, you know, in the old days, we may have lived to work, you know, but you know, we work so we can get out and live.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jason Davis. Jason's an international representative with the BCTGM International Union, bctgm.org, their website. You talked about greed for a moment, and I find it ironic that the company's name is Ingredion. I find that very, very interesting. But there was a market scanner report, and I don't know if you saw this back from September, that announced that this Ingredion Incorporated was going to be buying back some 6 million shares of their stock, and their stock's right around $100 a share. So we're looking at $600 million in buying back their stock. Now this is one of my pet peeves, because this company telling us we've got no productive use for $600 million. We can't give these workers raises. We can't invest in new equipment. We can't invest in new technology. We can't do. We're just gonna be greedy. We're going to be Ingredion, and we're clawing this back. This is the kind of stuff that drives me insane. And this is where I think we need to be focusing more attention on this kind of stuff, CEO pay, this kind of just blatant greed.
And I know I'm not saying anything new to you or your listeners. You know, most of these executives, their pay is directly tied to that stock price. And as these companies put into the stock buyback, and you're absolutely right on Ingredion. During the third quarter, they got an approval for another $600 million to spend towards stock buyback. You know, that's why they're, as the market was taking a bit of a downturn, Ingredion kept going up, because the shares are artificially inflated through these buybacks, which only turns around to the executives and the wealthy shareholders that are making that much more money because of, you know, let's take this $600 million and put it back into our shareholders.
So let me ask you this, you know, again, because the company has announced they're going to buy back $600 million in their shares to enrich the CEOs and the executives. What are your members asking for again?
Our members just asking for a fair contract, Rick. That's the funny part. You know,
you asking for $600 million because evidently they got it.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not, Rick. You know, we cost through where we believe our economic package is. In our economic package, we only look at increasing, I believe, as I'm looking at our last piece, it was under $3 million.
Is that a year?
Under $3 million of an increase.
Is that for the year or for the life of the contract?
Over the 4-year term.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
This this whole thing is over $3 million over 4 years with a company that's going to buy $600 million in shares. You're kidding me, right?
It's a little more complex than that, Rick, when we get into negotiations. Because each proposal has a different value to it. But when we look at the wage portion of it, by our calculations, when we were putting our calculations together of it, yes, it is very minuscule. It was around the $3 million mark.
Disgraceful. I mean, so then the question I have here is, if that's all it is, how much are they losing by putting out crap products? Because when we were there, you know, some of the people were saying, you know, they're putting out products that are, you know, coming back. They're putting out products that customers aren't using, that they're losing customers, that this is. And I know these big multinational companies don't care about their customers or consumers. They only care about fattening their bottom line. But at some point, it's got to kill the golden goose, no?
Diminishing returns, absolutely. So, you know, we had a strike here in 2004, and it actually took us 7 years to rework some of the bad product from a 78-day strike at that time. There's no telling how much bad product they have out there. But as of their third quarter 10-K reporting to the SEC, they reported a $9 million expense related to what do they call it? A labor dispute in Cedar Rapids. We'll just call it a strike. And that was only for the first 2 months. So when we take that out and average it out, that's $150,000 a day that they are spending to try to beat these workers. We've got 125 bargaining unit workers. They could pay these workers $1,000 a day and still come out 25 grand to the good every single day.
So then I got to ask the next question then. If it's not, it's clearly not about the money. Clearly. I mean, if it's only going to cost them a little over $3 million and they've lost $9 million, it's clearly not about the money. It's got to be about something else. So then my mind goes to the next space, which is normally what it is. Is this them trying to bust the union?
That may be part of it. I also believe it's, you know, it's sending a message across the rest of their network. Ingredion bought this company in 2015. It was previously known as Pedford Foods. And Ingredion's trying to come in here and standardize, I think more standardize to the rest of their contracts, this contract, which like I said, this location has had these work rules in place for a long period of time. This location has won several awards for being profitable, for being one of the better locations. I mean, they had some kind of a CEO dinner, I think it was, 2 or 3 weeks before they walked out on August 1st for their work performance over the past year. So, I mean, these members work hard. They put out a fantastic product. What they do it safely.
Yeah.
And one of the things that comes in this plant, too, is cornstarch these guys deal with. The actual danger that comes along with working with cornstarch and ethylene oxide, you know, so it's a safety risk that having these scabs in here replacement workers in
no,
here
they're scabs. No, they're scabs.
Causing as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
stop scabs. With the corporate speak. They're scabs.
That's right.
you just sparked a memory in me because when we were on the picket line there was a sign, you know, thanking the employees for their dedication and how much they meant and how essential they were. And while they forced these people out on the picket line, it's disgraceful. So let me ask you a last question on this. What's it going to take to get this done and how can people help?
We're going to be going back into negotiations with them next week for a couple days. People can continue to help through our, you can check it out on bctgm.org for ways to pitch into the GoFundMe page. Letters of support always help. Those are the actions that we have right now that we're looking at. You know, it's letters of support, getting any donations we can through our GoFundMe page. Those types of things, like I said, help supplement each week's strike pay to where it makes it a little more bearable for these members that are out here on the street with no insurance, no unemployment, no income.
Now, you just mentioned something a minute ago that the company took a $9 million expense because of the strike. Clearly, they've lost money because of this. I look at what happened at the Supreme Court on Tuesday. They heard this case. Glacier Northwest versus the International Brotherhood of Teamsters 174 because of lost product. I'm saying eventually down the road, if the Supreme Court decides this, eventually these kind of losses are something these companies are going to sue for. I'm curious your thoughts of what potentially could happen when this Supreme Court, and I think it's a done deal. I think they're going to make the wrong decision because this court hates working people. But I'm curious your thoughts on where this could go and what it could mean to your members. Because, look, you guys have had some very successful strikes over the last year. You know, places like Frito-Lay and Nabisco and Kellogg. And I'm hoping here as well. But I'm curious your thoughts.
It could be devastating, Rick. You know, it's no secret that there's been a long, systemic and concerted effort to defund unions and to, you know, whether it's Right to Work for Less, you know, wherever it is where they're trying to defund unions. And we simply don't have the resources that a lot of these multinational corporations have when it comes towards this type of thing. But when we get into a strike, let's say the strike's our last resort. You know, that's what it is. It's economic pressure on both sides to try to get to a deal. And that's, you know, that's a fundamental right for what our workers have and our members have, is to be able to go on strike. But when you start tying in the possibility of being tied down to millions of dollars, that's going to put unions out of business, in my opinion.
No, and that's the goal. The goal is to continue to threaten you with frivolous legal action, as they have done for decades now, to keep you spinning your wheels, defending yourself instead of getting out there doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is organizing new members and representing your current members to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, and rights for working people. As long as you're fighting frivolous lawsuits, they don't worry about you, which is why they need this. And which is why we, as working people, had better wake up to the realities politically. But Jason, I appreciate you taking time for us. I wish you and your members the best. I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts with us. And when this is over, when you guys have won, I want to have you back again to celebrate.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. Thank you for helping us get our message out, Rick. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you, Jason. Jason Davis, he is the international representative there with the BCTGM. The international union there, bctgm.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. I want to hear your thoughts. Going to take a quick break, wrap this up on the other side. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day a strike launched one of the most iconic rallying cries of the U.S. labor movement. 20,000, mostly women workers, in the Lawrence, Massachusetts textile mills began what became known as the Bread and Roses Strike. Led by the industrial workers of the world, the strike was one of the most important events in the history of women workers. The phrase Bread and Roses had been used a year earlier by poet John Oppenheim. He published his poem in the American magazine. His first verse read, "As we come marching, marching, in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses, for the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses." The second stanza continued, "As we come marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing, their ancient cry for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their drudging spirits knew. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too." The poem described a call by workers not just for bread or better wages for the basic needs of life. It also called for roses, a life that could include time for beauty and meaning, In 1976, Mimi Farina, the sister of Joan Baez, put the lyrics to music. In 2000, a filmmaker used the title Bread and Roses for his story of unionization efforts of Mexican workers in Los Angeles. And for the past century, the image of Bread and Roses has continued to capture the imagination of working people standing up for their rights.
As we come marching, marching, we bring the greater days. For the rising of the women means the
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
My mind is stuck. My mind is stuck in the economic portion of that contract, $3 million over 4 years, and yet in the first couple of months, they lost $9 million. This is a company, this Ingredion, a company that's going to buy $600 million in their stock back, and yet, hey, can't do it. Can't possibly do it. This is why I keep coming back to, our politics are so badly broken. Our tax code, incredibly broken. The incentives in this country, so screwed up. And why, again, I come back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower. This CEO, this James Zallie, in 2021 pocketed over $10 million. Now, the average worker down on that line, making somewhere in the $18 to $21 an hour range, somewhere in there. Sorry, that's less than $50,000 a year. And yet this guy's making over $10 million, as the AFL-CIO pointed out, 449 times the median employee pay. Stop and think about that for a second. Now, if you go back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and I say that tongue-in-cheek for those who don't know, Ike was not a socialist. Ike was a Republican president. But they did have a 92% top marginal tax rate. So CEO Zallie here, on everything over about $1.6, $1.8 million, would be paying 92% tax on everything from 1.6 all the way up to gazillions. And the incentive for them to make corporate decisions on lining their pockets weren't as great. The incentives weren't there. Because that next dollar would only make them a little bit wealthier. Now, nobody paid the 92% rate. They did pay somewhere in the high 60s. Because there were tons of loopholes, much like there are now. Because we incentivize certain behaviors, as we always do. And I'm not against that. But during the Reagan years, we came up with this idea of allowing corporations to buy back their shares of stock. And we didn't bother taxing them for it. So they took money that workers earned. They took the wealth that was created by the labor of these workers. They took it out of the business. They took it out of wages. They took it out of benefits. They took it out of fringe benefits. You know, it was sick days. You know, vacation, retirement. They took it out of all of that stuff. They hoarded it into the coffer. And then they pumped up their share price by buying back these stocks. Why? So they could line their own pockets. And I had someone the other day, because I said, you know, why don't we talk about stock buybacks as a way of dealing with price increases? Because these corporations are choosing to increase prices because they can, so that they can fatten the bottom line, so that they have more revenue coming in, so they can do more stock buybacks. And then be like, well, how does that work? It works just like I said. The more revenue they bring in, the more opportunity it is for them to buy back their shares, to pump up the share price of the stock, because most CEOs are tied to the price of the stock being their pay. An incentive, I don't know that is all that smart. But if we go back to the good socialist president, Dwight Eisenhower, that $10 million isn't going into his pocket. And we take that money and we invest it in things that we need. It's disgraceful. that we're in a moment in time where work is this degraded. And you wonder why people feel angry. You wonder why people feel frustrated. And I had someone say the other day, again to me, they go, you know, no one wants to work anymore. And I said, and I retorted quickly, nobody wants to work for poverty wages for people who don't care about them. Of course nobody wants to come to work for you. If this is how you treat them, you treat them with dignity and respect. You show them.
We all make promises, big and small, tested over time and distance, tried by circumstances and decisions.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
I do solemnly swear to bear true faith and allegiance.
To help you when you're in need.
To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
To be considerate and caring. Courageous and strong.
For better.
For worse.
In sickness and in health.
To love and cherish.
To be your loving, faithful friend.
Partner.
Child.
Parent.
Neighbor.
One of our most important commitments is to support our nation's veterans. Learn how you can help a veteran going through a difficult time by visiting maketheconnection.net.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcast.